Blog Talk Radio. I listen to everything, and not just to the music itself, but to the hearts behind it.
Welcome, everyone. And the first thing we're going to do is I want to just tell you how to connect with us. If you go to blogtalkradio.com/creatorsparrot, that will bring you to our channel, and then you will see an episode for this show that says Leslie Barber, Zane Effendi, and Coco O'Connor. And what you do is there's a little player. When you get to the page, normally it starts playing on its own. If not, just press the play button on the player and the show will begin. All right. Now, also, another way that you can connect to us is through the telephone. And you can hear the entire show through the telephone. And the telephone number for the show is area code 347-202-0238. That's area code 347-202-0238. That's also the number for the switchboard. So if you have any questions for anyone, or if you want to talk to any of us, or if you want to let us know what your first song is that you remember, or what is the last song that you want to hear before you leave this earth, then make sure you give us a call. You'll go into the switchboard, and we'll connect you, or I will connect you since I'm working the switchboard today. Also, we do have a chat room, and I'm going to go ahead and start the chat session so that if anyone wants to start chatting, feel free to do so. All righty. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a song that I've selected to dedicate to Haiti, to their healing and to their well-being. I've been doing that for the past, I guess the show started in January, and this is actually our third show in which we are featuring guests. And we always feature a song at the beginning. And so the song for today is from the CD Avenues of Love by Marilyn Scott, and the song I've chosen for you is called Hold You Up, and this again is dedicated to the people and to the island of Haiti. So I'm going to cue it up right now, and I hope you enjoy it.
My center, I'm you inside. We share the passion each time
Has had to step down as a regular co-host. because his life is so very busy, that he's unable to regularly, even though it's just every 2 weeks, participate as the guest co-host. And, you know, I'm going to try and get him to come back a couple of times, maybe get him to do some podcast for the show, something like that. So I am still talking to him about having a relationship with the show, and hopefully it will happen. So miss you, Neil, and I hope to be with you soon here on the show. Now, there is a bit of a special news. Now, today we are interviewing, who are we interviewing? Wow, we've got Leslie Barber, who is a film composer, and you probably already know a little bit something about her and some of the movies that she has composed, scored, done the soundtracks for. And we're going to talk to her about her work and some of the things that are close to her heart. Also, we have Zane Afrendi, who is Best New Composer per the Hollywood Music and Media Organization. So we have Zane here today. We're going to talk to him. And also we have Coco O'Connor, who was nominated as Best Ambient Vocalist for the same organization, Hollywood Music and Media. So we have really a pretty good packed show. Now, Zane has graciously said that he is going to serve as the guest co-host to try and help out here today, which I'm very, very grateful to you, Zane, for your agreeing to do that. And, Zane, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great. So welcome to the show, and thank you again so much for agreeing to participate as the guest co-host today.
Thank you, Val.
You're welcome. So how are you feeling about being guest co-host? I'm always feeling butterflies in my stomach. I'm always a little nervous when I start this show.
Well, I was nervous about the interview, actually. So then when you asked to be to be a guest host, that's a whole other level, really.
Well, you know, let's see. I guess we're just going to get started because it's 3:17, and I have lost the first guest. So what I'm going to do, I think, is I'm going to play one of her songs. So I want to scroll down the list here of songs that I have queued, music that I have queued. And I'm going to start with, let's see, there, I have a clip from A Price Above Rubies, a movie that starred Renee Zellweger, and also, I'm trying to remember the other guy's name that started, Mark Ruffalo, that's right, that particular actor, and I have a clip of that. I also have a clip of A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, the trailer from that. I also have her most recent film, which is called Victoria Day. I have the trailer for that as well, and I also have a clip, just a very brief one from the film Mansfield Park. It's called Almost Kiss. So these are scenes that have her music on them. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the clip from A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, and I'm going to try to connect her back to us. All right, so everybody stay tuned. And enjoy this clip. It's about a 2-minute clip. And when we come back, hopefully we'll have Leslie Barber on the phone with us.
The Chinese have a saying that it takes 1,000 years of good prayers for a father and daughter to get along. My daughter has become a stranger since she moved to America.
Have you ever thought about finding answers to all the questions you have?
China no have God.
That's why we're here talking to you.
This country is a mystery to me.
What you do?
I studied to be a forensic scientist.
I'm scientist. A rocket scientist.
A lot of people think I'm weird and morbid, but I think I have a very sunny outlook on things.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You like sun.
After traveling so far,
My journey has just begun.
Hello. I had a daughter. She died.
My daughter, she's not happy.
你还从来没有跟我说过你们为什么离婚的。
你跟妈妈就从来不谈你们婚姻中的问题，所以我也就学会了不谈。
What are you looking for?
Present, my daughter, 17 old.
Say salam.
Say salam.
These bears were thought to possess magic powers.
现在国内不是好多老人丧偶之后都会再找个伴一起过吗？
This is old. If you want something from 300 years ago, you need to pay big bucks. And this, conceptually, is as old as a 300-year-old piece.
Okay, I'm back. This is Val again, and now I'm back with Leslie. Hello, Leslie.
Hi, Val.
How are you today?
Pretty good.
Good. Listen, I'd like to introduce you to our surprise guest co-host for today, who is also actually being interviewed after you, and he's stepping in for our guest co-host that had to step out, perhaps for the entire show, perhaps just for part of it. But Zane Effendi, I want you to meet Leslie Barber.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Pretty good. Nice to meet you, Zane.
You too. Nice to meet you. Yeah.
Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start, we always start on this show, asking our guests the first question. And the first question is always, either what is the first song, Leslie, that you remember hearing as a young child, perhaps a song that had an impression on you and stayed with you, or you can also answer the question, what is the first song that impressed you to the point that you knew you wanted your life to take the turn that it did into the being a music composer, into music in some way, shape, or form?
Okay. I guess as a youngster, I was exposed to a lot of different music that was played by relatives, everything from Rachmaninoff to the Beatles to everything. And so I grew up hearing with some really good amateur musicianship around me. And but I guess a life-changing piece that really pops into my mind would be when I was about 14, a friend of the family gave me tickets to something, and I didn't even know what it was really. It was chamber music, and you ate food beforehand and had champagne, and I was like the only kid in the crowd, and I drank champagne and then heard live in a very intimate situation a Bartok string quartet. I think it was number 5, and there was some wonderful playing, and there's a lot of glissando in the piece, and it was followed by some Elliot Carter, and it kind of blew my mind. I thought this is intellectually this is fantastic, and I think it was a bit life changing. Yeah.
Okay, great.
The champagne was as well, but.
at age 14, all of that bubbly stuff going up your nose and the
music. With glissando, it was just too much, really.
So it was heady in two ways, through the bubbles and through the music. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, it was just a really fascinating. It was just a wonderful experience, and the musicianship was just extraordinary, and it was fascinating to hear music invented on that level.
Now, what other kind of music were you listening to at that time? 14, you're a teenager already. Were you listening to rock and roll, too, and things like that, or was it strictly classic?
Yeah, very much so. My parents were really into collecting records, and yet there was a lot of classical music being played. Yeah, and there was punk and I was really into that, and yeah.
Well,
a lot of different, very eclectic, you know.
Very eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something we're probably going to talk about a little bit later too. But I wanted to go ahead and let the guest co-host get a question in here. Go ahead, Zane.
Okay. Well, you know, being a film composer myself, the first question I have to ask is, how did you get your start as a film composer? Is it something that just fell into your lap, or did you have to jump through various hoops to finally break into this very, you know, quite a competitive industry?
Well, there was an inevitability about it, I suppose, in that I was very interested in theater and very interested in following new works. And I was meeting filmmakers and playwrights along the way and started being asked to write for theater and then film, and absolutely was drawn to the ability to connect the visual with the composing of music. It just seemed to happen.
Wow. So so you're writing for theater. It says that you worked in Toronto with alternative theater there.
Yeah, I was doing my master's degree here, and I needed to earn some money, and I was going to theater all the time when I had the time, and then I just started meeting people in the theater world and got a job at a theater, and they asked me to write some music for something, and I just really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it is fun. Now, to be clear, you're both a film composer and then, you know, a composer of absolute music or, you know, concert music. So, there is no doubt that there is a major rift that exists. At least there was, you know, 5 years ago when I was at a conservatory, a major rift between commercial music, which is film music, and concert music, which is considered academic music. And so, you know, you're at an interesting vantage point where you have your foot in both schools of music. And I'm curious what your perspective is and which school you tend to identify with more.
I've worked on projects that interest me for different reasons, and I try not to actually spend too much time thinking about what the message of my choices are. I will say that at a certain point that the commissioning that was available to me still was very much a trio, a quartet, and I wanted to orchestrate. That was always the thing I was drawn to and the thing I loved to do. And the way to become a better composer of orchestral music was to work on films. And luckily, the films were made by people who wanted to kind of push outside the box and the genre-driven music that you hear so much. So I felt that I was able to grow each step of the way, and perhaps it would be fun to break out and do a large-scale piece that was just simply orchestral. But usually these pieces are really badly rehearsed, and they can be really a negative experience for a composer. And if you can have the budget and the time to work with an orchestra on maybe a smaller piece, but have it beautifully executed, it can be really rewarding.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I jump in here with a question for a second?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. We're going to play like ping pong, bounce back and forth. Okay, Leslie, with the question. I was wondering, trying to get more to the personal and to your youth as a young girl here, what kind of a girl, what kind of a kid were you? Did you write a lot of poetry? Were you a very expressive child? Were you kind of the tomboyish kind of kid where you liked to go out and, you know, play sports? Did you like to hang out in nature? Did nature have an impact on you? Or were you more of an isolated kind of child? Did you have a lot of friends? Did you keep a diary? Was it easy for you to get your emotions out, or Were you the kind of kid that, you know, used writing or music to express yourself? Or did you, you know, I know, like my sister growing up had the gift for gab a lot. I was more of the quiet kind of person that liked to write and, you know, watch movies and play the guitar, whereas my sister had a lot of girlfriends, and she was very outgoing, and they seemed to have this great camaraderie with one another. You know, how were you moved? Were things stirring within, like from the very beginning? Am I being clear about my question?
You mean in terms of the creative voice? Where, I grew up with a very large, unruly family, and very creative. We had all kinds of crazy projects we did, which helped me with my composing, I think. Like, if we wanted to build a treehouse, it would be a huge treehouse with drafts, and it would be 40 feet in the air, and I helped my dad brick the house one summer. There were all kinds of things that we did that were, I suppose, unusual and creative, and demanded a certain amount of technical awareness. But at the same time, you know, and also I grew up spending a ton of time in the country and on farms. But at the same time, when I started composing and playing as a child, and writing as a child, I spent quite a bit of time doing that. Yeah, and I had a special room, which was fairly soundproof, that, you know, I could spend hours playing if I wanted to, and not disturb other people who are trying to watch the hockey game or what have you.
Now, did you go off into the fantasy world when you were working, when you were composing, or were you more analytical? I'm just trying to get a sense of your personality, you know, as a youngster there. You know, were you slaying dragons, or were you a bit more practical, you know, while you were...
Well, I don't think I was practical at all. I think, you know, it's just it's like writing in a journal, but you're just writing music. You don't know why, it's just occurring, and, you know, I did used to play the piano for hours and hours on end, and I have no idea what I was thinking when I was doing it, but I really enjoyed the pursuit, and I had people around me who would, when they would hear me, you know, bang up against the wall, would say, why don't you have a look at this Chopin piece, or why don't you listen to this pop music piece or whatever and think about that chord progression. And so, you know, it was nurtured, but it was really intuitive, I'd say.
Okay, go ahead, Zane. I'm going to pass it back to you, the question.
So, you know, typically when it comes to filmmaking, as sad as it is, there seems to be a shroud around the whole, you know, film scoring process. People know that, you know, there's music in a film, but most of them probably don't have an idea of how it was created and the whole process behind that. So I'm sure listeners would be curious to hear about your personal scoring process, and maybe if you could give us an idea of, you know, what your job is like, from everything from dealing with directors and producers to the hectic timelines, and then, you know, finally, what is your personal writing process? How do you come up with and then produce the scores for your films?
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes you get given a script by a director, or you're told about the material and you can start thinking about it. But quite often it's a little bit like a shotgun wedding, or an arranged marriage of sorts, where you're suddenly working with someone, really about really big ideas that there's just huge ideas that you have to go into. And I suppose when I look at a film with a director, I want to know emotionally how I can help a scene, and what's missing from a scene, what are the absences, how can my voice be cast into the film in a way that fulfills some unanswered questions, or even perhaps provokes unanswered questions. So I want to find out the motivation, and then from there on, you know, there are some things that are, there's a kind of an environmental or atmospheric aspect. You know, is this film urban? is this film in a small town? Is this a kitchen sink drama? Is this film going to have helicopter shots where you need to, you know, help the audience feel the money being spent? I don't know. There's all different aspects that come into play. And then it's just simply dividing my time into playtime and editing, finishing time. And I'm quite disciplined about that. So part of my day will be intuitive and playful, and then the second part of the day will be making the playtime produce something that's extremely useful to the scene. I don't know
right.
if that helps at all.
No, of course. And so do you when it comes down to actually creating this music, do you find yourself sitting at a piano, or are you sitting in front of a computer and sequencing using synthesizers and, you know, obviously not real instruments, so that you can have that music? How do you work? Are you more of, you know, do you have the classical approach, or are you more contemporary in that you use computers and the advanced equipment that there is?
Well, my studio, my work environment is in kind of a large horseshoe shape, and I have a grand piano and guitars, and then I have my computer with a large screen. And my piano, it's an old grand, 1910 German grand, and it has a MIDI interface in it, and it's all microphoned up so that anything that I play can be saved as data and as an audio artifact. And as well, I love my software and sometimes develop themes through motivic exploration and algorithmic sequencing of ideas. And so it's like a laboratory, and it's like a a very traditional composer setup in one.
Well, that's great. So you have a lot of different ways you can get that music out.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It's very customized for the project, yeah.
So now on your site, it says you have an insatiable appetite for contemporary music. And I'm assuming that you might be talking about orchestral music. So influences like, you know, Webern and Berg and Babbitt and Takamitsu. What influence do these people have on your music in the film world?
Well, actually, I don't know who wrote that, but I think they might have been talking about that, that I really love pop music too, but
okay, because it was very strange. It's okay.
Yeah, I have to read that. I don't know where that is. So, I do like going to new music concerts and things too. It's just all over the map, really.
And that's probably a product of also.
Okay. I'm gonna jump in there with a question, and I'll let you get back. To you. Also, I want to make sure that we play some music. It's my responsibility to watch the time, and it's 3:38, and we're going to try and go to at least 3:45 with you, Leslie, and maybe just a little bit longer as well. Zane and I were talking a little bit earlier about trailers, because I told him that, you know, I had uploaded a couple of trailers and listened to them, and I said I wish trailers were more like when we used to go to the movies, and these great movies would start, you know, back in the old days. We call them the olden days, or the, you know, when, you know, movies were young, the 40s and the 50s. And you would sit in the movie, and when a musical began, there would be this great sort of overture, and you would get to listen to all of the music or a lot of the music that you could look forward to in the film. Much like with the theater. I used to just love to go to the theater and sit and listen to the overture and get a taste, get a feel for what I was entitled to. And so I used to think that trailers were the same way. In fact, even when I was listening to a couple of your trailers, and I listened to Victoria Day trailer, I listened to A Thousand Years of Good Prayers trailer, which I've played already. And then I listened to the beginning of A Price Above Rubies, and I was thinking, oh, you know, this is going to give me a taste or a flavor for the composer and what I can look forward to, you know, with the film. And then when I talked to Zane, he said, you know, like a lot of times, the composer has not actually written the music for the trailer. Now, is that true?
It is true, actually, yeah. Because there's just, they just want to, you know, use that trailer to usually draw people into the theater thinking it's going to be a fun film or really dramatic. And, there's a different agenda at work usually, yeah. But sometimes they use your music, for sure.
Okay, so then for A Thousand Years of Good Prayers, the trailer that I played, the music is not your music.
I haven't seen the trailer. That music that you're playing that I just got the last of it, that's not my music. No, I'm not sure. I haven't seen the trailer, actually.
Okay, well,
sometimes it's a cut and paste of actual music in the film and music that's used, you know, to get the trailer across, so to speak.
Okay, have you heard the trailer for Victoria Day yet? Do you know, have you seen it or heard it?
No, I haven't checked that out either. Sorry.
Okay, I'm going to play it because I'm very curious about this, whether or not this is your music, because I think...
It could very well not be. I really don't know.
Okay, most of us think that that's what we're listening to. To a trailer. So I'm going to go ahead and play it, and then you can tell me yes or no. And then I'm going to play some music from the beginning of A Price Above Rubies, and hopefully this is your music, because we didn't really have time to, you know, upload the music that you provided, you know, not too long ago. So I'm going to play this track. It's only 2 minutes and 34 seconds, and then we'll come back, okay?
Сколько ты возвращаешься?
I don't know, 12 o'clock?
Во сколько начал?
8.
Не делай глупости.
What do you mean by глупости?
Ты не знаешь, что такое глупости?
You want me to give you $5 so you can buy drugs? It's not going towards drugs. It's going towards good drugs.
Did any of you guys see my brother at the show last night?
No. Why? No?
You don't have to.
No, I want to.
У тебя были гости. Полиция. И у них были к тебе вопросы по поводу мальчика, который пропал. Ты что-нибудь знаешь об этом?
So, is she your girlfriend?
Who?
The girl with the bicycle.
What are you doing going on with Melanie when you're in love with that guy's sister?
Would you stop saying that?
I'd like to thank you all for finding the time to assist us in this search.
I don't think we should be playing when there's a kid missing.
I'm actually bringing that down because it's not your music. I don't want to play very much more of it, but it's in your head.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great. I'm going to just put it back up again then. Can you tell us a little bit about that particular film? That is your last film, is that correct? That has been.
I think so. Yeah.
that's
well, there's Death and Love, which was on at Sundance. I'm not sure. I can't remember which one was last. Yeah, but yeah, it's one of my last films for sure.
And what was that experience like working on that film? Was that any different than any of the other films you worked on? Are they all different, or are they?
Very much so. It really depends on the scale of the film and the director and how much time you have. But that was a wonderful experience. Worked with a first-time director, David Bismagis, who's so talented, very talented writer, and very clear director. It was really fun in that we recorded everything in a new building that I'm in, and it was all done in my studio, and I had some players from the Toronto Symphony Orchestra here, and it felt a bit like guerrilla film scoring, and I very much enjoyed that part of it. It felt very alive, and the director had excellent comments, and really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm going to play one more of your tunes right now, A Price Above Rubies, from the beginning of the film, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more, and then Zane, you can jump in there with any questions you might have, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, let's go. Here we go, A Price Above Rubies, from the beginning music.
Wanted her to marry a scholar from the Pinsk Yeshiva. But for some reason, maybe she was a little crazy, who knows? She didn't want to. Anyhow, she ran away.
She ran away from home?
Yeah. It was in the middle of winter. She wandered into the forest. At first, no one at home even knew she ran away. They thought she got lost in the snow somewhere and died. They looked and looked for her, but they never found her body. They decided the wolves ate her up. So
they'll kill us if they find you here.
They'll just kill me.
Okay, that was A Price Above Rubies, the beginning of the film. Go ahead, Zane, do you have a question?
Yeah, that's actually the first time I've heard that piece of music. It's really beautiful, and I can hear your chamber music influence, but it's very fresh and contemporary, you know. So you know, what was your creative process in that? Did you this is the one that you brought in the instrumentalist to your new studio, and you?
Oh no, that was one I scored that in Los Angeles, and used an orchestra with that and a tabla player. And then did, of course, the synth programming to build up that sound. And I guess the challenge with that was the film was set in a Hasidica community in New York, in Borough Park, and how do we, you can't really hear it in that cue, but how do we give voice to this community and this tradition and still have a flexible music that sounds contemporary and is rooted in also contemporary life, which the lead character is, she's trying to balance those two worlds. So that was really challenging and exciting to work on.
Yeah, the music's quite exciting. I mean, it has a lot of forward energy in it. I can really hear the story in that music, and I look forward to seeing the film, actually.
Yeah, it's a good one, yeah.
Is there anything coming up that's exciting that you that we can look out for, future projects or things coming out?
Well, I'm just working on right now a program for HBO, which is with Amy Schatz, who just worked with Rosie O'Donnell on A Family's a Family's a Family. We're working on a program for children that looks at classic poetry, and I'm underscoring right now. It's really fun. I just got my first three poems, but it's Liam Neeson reading a poem, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Ziggy Marley, and I'm really enjoying this project. It's the poems are beautiful, and it's always nice to do something for kids that doesn't condescend or simplify things too much.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Oh, go ahead.
Earlier, John and I were talking about we definitely need to have you back on the show because there is that whole realm of the composing that you've done for Little Bear, and you know, your heart and your interests, you know, go out to children in the project that you're just talking about that you're involved in, and we would love to know more about that. And we were also talking about trying to, you know, have a show where parents and children are listening together.
Mm.
You know, so it would be sort of a family kind of fun thing to do. So I just want to ask you, I hope you're able to come back in the future and would be interested in doing, say, a one-hour show where we're focusing on children and
sure.
activities with that.
Yeah, sounds like a great idea.
Oh, wonderful. Happy to hear that. Zane, do you have another question before I go to the last song question? Because time just goes so quickly on this show when, you know, when you're having fun and, you know, having such great guests as you, Leslie.
Yeah, no, it does. You know, actually, I do have an interesting question because I have my opinions on the matter, and I'm sure you have a very interesting perspective on the current climate of film and filmmaking and film, and which ties into film music. I'm finding that, you know, I'm getting nostalgic and missing some of the great, you know, the great classical music that used to be used in film. And today, you know, you find that kind of disappearing. And there seems to be a change in film music. You hear a lot of song placement, contemporary music, and, you know, rock and roll. And to take it to the next level, you know, you have a lot of rock and roll musicians now who are scoring films. So it's really changed the climate of you know, current films. Not to say that it's bad, but I do sometimes miss that classical music, like we just heard in your last piece, you know, that kind of music. So how do you feel about that, and what's your vision of the future of film music?
Well, it's certainly changed, and I think that there's still a lot of money being spent on the big top kind of films, you know, the Batman and, you know, and this kind of thing. And in independent film, there's always been room for exploration and expression. And there's a middle ground, though, the films that are maybe 8 to 25 million, where they just don't have the money to spend on scores. And a lot of the recording studios have disappeared. So we're all searching for new ways to connect to films and do it for less money and do it in a more intelligent way. And I guess the thing I notice is I can hear sometimes the way the process has worked in terms of temp scores, which are temporary scores that music editors put to films, and you miss the big theme. The big theme seems to have been chucked out of the process. And that theme would have narrative force, you know? And it seems like music has been commodified a little bit more, and it's almost like it's small pieces. It's not big pieces, and I don't understand that. But I think maybe in 20 years we can look back and we'll figure out what happened.
Yeah, well, it's good to know that there's people like you that are out there making fresh music, because I do listen to a lot of film music, and from what I've heard today, you've got some very, very powerful contemporary and new, fresh sounds, so it's all good news.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Leslie. We really appreciate it, and I want to end the interview with the last song question, which we always ask all of the guests that we have on the show, And that is, what is the last song you want to hear before your life ends here on earth?
So you mentioned that this morning, and I was thinking about it, and I started to think really practically about it, and I started thinking, well, would you just keep looping the same piece till you died or something? But I was thinking, you know, life is so unpredictable that I would probably have a playlist of about maybe about 110 pieces or so, and whatever piece, and they would be selected for various reasons, and they could be just the sound of my children singing, or they could be really schmaltzy things, or I don't know. And whatever piece was playing at the time would be the right piece because it was the right piece. But I thought it was a really interesting question. I don't know.
Oh, well, thank you, and thank you for answering it as well. And again, we definitely would love to have you back again for an hour for a show focusing on kids. And thank you for the time that you took today to be with us here on Sunday Brunch, the first and the last song.
Thank you.
And certainly,
nice meeting you.
Feel free to hang around as well. I'm sorry, Zane, I didn't mean to cut
you. No, it's fine. Yeah, it's just great meeting you and hearing your music.
Thanks, Zane. Same with you guys. It's just great.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Okay, so Zane, what I'm going to do is now I'm going to do a piece of your music so we can make the transition into the interview with you. And do you want to set up this piece of music, this piece called Montage, before we go into it? And then when we come back, we'll just check back in and start from there.
Yeah, in the spirit of the Academy's coming up next weekend, the Academy Awards, and, you know, just trying to pack in all my different styles of music in this small show, I conveniently had a montage of about 15 different styles and pieces of music that I've written over the past year or two, and so I just put brief highlights of each of them into somewhat of a montage, and just give you a taste of everything that I can do.
Okay, great. All right, so we'll go to it right now, montage of your music.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Val Oliver. Welcome to Sunday Brunch, the first and last song. This is Creator's Parrot Channel on Blog Talk Radio. And we are talking about and talking with people who are composers in the film and television industry, people who participate in music and media, whether it's music that they're composing or whether that music is placed in films, television. And we just got through speaking with Leslie Barber, a film composer. And we also have on the show, and actually she has composed for an Academy Award-winning film, You Can Count on Me, which we didn't actually have too much time to talk about because the time went so quickly. And joining me on that interview was Zane Effendi. Sometimes I get a little...
No, it's actually Effendi.
It's Effendi.
Yeah.
No R in there. And Zane joined us as a guest co-host because John Hansen had to bow out today due to family obligations. And so, again, we miss you, John. And so we're going to begin our conversation with you now, Zane. We're going to interview you about who you are and the work that you do. Now, the first question, again, is always, what is the first song that you remember hearing that had an impact on you as a child, or what is the first song that had such an impression on you that you felt that you wanted to go into music or develop yourself in the field of music or follow that particular path in life?
Well, it's a tough question because thinking back to some of the first music I heard, it's all kind of a big blob, really. It's kind of a fuzzy blob. But I can definitely say that what encouraged me to take upon the career as a film composer was some of the early film music that I heard in my early teens. I was very much impacted by, you know, movies like Jurassic Park, you know, John Williams, and then, of course, the big 90s had all the big action films, so all those Hans Zimmer scores really impacted me. I just, you know, it was sounds I had never heard. It was this fusion of, you know, synthetic instruments with live orchestra, and it blew my mind at the time, and it really, I think it really influenced my life and my decisions as a musician.
Now, where did you grow up? You grew up in Colorado, isn't that correct?
Yeah, I grew up in northern Colorado. It's a small city of about 100,000 people. It's called Fort Collins. It's a college town. And so, you know, I was surrounded by beautiful mountains and snowboarding and skiing and just a very family-oriented city.
And so you had a very pleasant childhood.
I did, yeah. It was my parents were divorced, so that was, you know, that played a big role in my life because I split my time between my father's house and then my mom's house as well. My mother's house was more of the artistic and very, you know, forward-thinking house, whereas my father was a bit more conservative. So I really enjoyed the time I was at my mom's house and I could sit and play the piano. And, you know, she was very encouraging of the arts in general. So that's I'm glad to have had that.
And then you moved east at some point, isn't that correct? And you went to school at the Boston Conservatory for Music and also Berkeley, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, you know, I spent my first 18 years in kind of a small city life. And, you know, and although there was many benefits, there was also quite a bit of restrictions, especially in regards to being an artist. I found that I had kind of gone through all of the teachers that I could, and I had surpassed, you know, the teaching that they had given me, and it reached a point, luckily around when I was 18, where I realized if I want to continue on as an artist, I need to go to a city center or to a cultural center, whether it be in Europe or in the United States, where I can find new challenges and forward-thinking artists. So it was such an amazing opportunity to be able to leave, you know, my little town in Colorado and move all the way to the East Coast to that beautiful city of Boston with a very European likeness and just surrounded by great intelligence, amazing colleges, you know, over, I think, 150 universities and colleges just in the area of Boston. It was incredible.
And who were some of your teachers in Boston? Who were some of the people that inspired you there? And what was it about what they taught you about music? What was their particular, what were their particular techniques? And who were some of their mentors?
You know, my first school was the Boston Conservatory for Music, Theater, and Dance. And there's a list of conservatories in the United States. There's 8 premier conservatories, and so this was on the list, and you know, it's on the same list as Juilliard, and there's Oberlin Conservatory, Manhattan Conservatory, and the list goes on. So, you know, I knew it was going to be a challenge going there, but I really did not expect enough, because when I got there, it was extremely challenging. And you know, I was in classes with kids that had been writing, you know, symphonic work since they were 4. And had written maybe 100 times more material than I had ever even considered. So, you know, I was all of a sudden I was a small fish in a very gigantic ocean of, you know, mega superstars and thinkers and whatnot. So, you know, the conservatory was amazing, and the education I got there has played a big role in my life. The discipline, it was very difficult. At the end of every semester, we would have a jury, and we'd have to play in front of judges. And it was a sort of pass or fail system. So, you know, there was no in between. You either fail or you pass. And if you fail, you're on probation, and you could easily get kicked out of the conservatory. So there was a lot of pressure when you'd walk into the room and have to play piano for all these judges with their pencils and paper and taking notes and stuff. That was my experience at the conservatory. And I studied under, you know, some pretty amazing teachers. Andy Vors, who was the head of composition, and now I think he's one of the head of the school, was a big influence in my life. And, you know, it was tough love, you know. I mean, he definitely broke me down and then built me back up again, but I'm thankful for it now.
And were there any particular kinds of musical techniques that he taught you that you still use in your music? I mean, out of all of the teachers, I'm sure we're going to talk about Hans Zimmer in a moment, what did you take with you? What are you creating today that you, when you hear it, you say, oh, that's that person's influence?
Well, it's funny because, you know, at the conservatory, I wasn't studying film music in particular. I was very focused in concert music, and so writing, you know, cello sonatas and piano sonatas and chamber music and whatnot. And it was more when I went to Berkeley that they had a pretty incredible film scoring program. And that's when I had the opportunity to, you know, sit down and look at a picture, look at a moving picture and, you know, write music to that, as well as all of the technical aspects of, you know, making everything synchronized. And there's a lot of technology actually involved in modern film composing. So, you know, I would say musically, I still think it's very unique to myself. I'm not necessarily musically influenced by my teachers. However, my discipline, you know, of being able to work, you know, 18 hours sometimes, 24 hours straight without any sleep and always deliver on time, those disciplines I definitely brought with me from my schools on the East Coast.
Okay, and what led you, how did you become involved with Hans Zimmer? How did you get to the West Coast? Because you were in the East Coast and you were in school over here. What made you decide to go West? Was it an offer that you got? Was it a scholarship to a school out there? Exactly what happened?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting story. You know, ever since I was, like I mentioned, some of the most influential music in my life came from the, you know, Hans Zimmer studios. And you know, early movies like The Rock and The Lion King and, I mean, the list goes on. So many movies that he scored in the 90s, one after another, just influencing me. So, you know, when I was very young, my parents, you know, knew very well that I wanted to one day work for Hans Zimmer at age like 12. So, you know, of course, I eventually then end up in the East Coast, but I always had that in the back of my mind. And I made friends with a very nice guy who happens to be one of my best friends now in L.A. And he was leaving Berkeley at the time to go work for Hans Zimmer. And so he was my connection to that. So one day I was sitting in class at Berkeley and I got a call from him, "Hey, how'd you like to come work at Hans's studio?" sort of thing. So literally left in the middle of my test at Berkeley and packed a bag, caught the next flight out, and the next day I was in LA, interviewed for the job, and I got it. So there was no transition. It literally happened overnight, and I just kind of jumped on the bandwagon.
Wow, that had to be just, and still is today, one of the highlights of your life, one of the high points.
Yeah, it was absolutely surreal. I mean, you know, imagine one day you're sitting in class studying, Hollywood and film composers, and the next day you're literally in the mix sitting, you know, in a room with Gore Verbinski, the director of Pirates of the Caribbean, or, you know, Nancy Myers, who directed The Holiday, and it's, you know, it's complicated, it's her latest film. So it was amazing, and I was, you know, I think I was 23 at the time, so, I mean, it blew my mind.
Well, I know that you and our next guest, Coco O'Connor, are both involved with the Hollywood in Media Awards, that Coco was a nominee in one of the categories, and you as well, for Best New Composer. And I actually see that Coco's on the line. So, Coco, I know that you're here. I just want to let you know that I see the 818 number. Since I'm working solitary with the switchboard today and also doing the interviews, I just wanted to let you know that I know you're there, and we're going to, bring you into the conversation in the near future. But back to you for a moment, Zane, and the Hollywood Music and Media Awards. Was this the first time that you submitted something? Were you invited? How does that work, by the way?
Yeah, it was. That's again another interesting story. I had no idea about the submission, and my publicist gave me a call and said, "Hey, are you going to submit for this thing?" And I said, "Well, tell me about it." And she did, and I said, "Yeah, sure." And she said, "Okay, well, you got to do it in the next hour because the submission is deadline is in an hour from now." And so I was on the other side of LA when I got the call, you know, not anywhere near my studio. So I rushed to my studio and I submitted a track from my latest film at the time, Gage Town. And in the middle of the upload, it froze. And so, you know, the cutoff for the submission was 12 a.m., I believe, and it was 12:05, and then finally it went through, and I said, "Oh, boy, you know, I messed this one up, but whatever, let it go." And then, to my surprise, a couple weeks later, I received news that I had been nominated for Best New Composer, and then, of course, you know, to surpass that surprise was when I actually won the award. So it was just it's one of those fate things where you really don't have control over it.
Well, I'm going to play that award-winning song, Gage Town, in a moment. So why don't you go ahead and set up for us, the song, the movie or the film that you composed it for, so that we have a little bit of background before I play the song.
Sure. Gage Town is a socially conscious film about a military base in Canada, in New Brunswick, which is in the east, the far east of Canada. And this military base was built, I think, in the 50s. And there's a lot of controversy behind this story because essentially this military base was built by spraying very, very hazardous chemicals, essentially Agent Orange, in the forest to clear the forest to build the military base. And so, of course, they sprayed for over 40 years, and it had a very, very negative impact on the surrounding people, the surrounding cities living there, as well as the people at the military base themselves, because it housed families and whatnot. So it's a very dark, dark documentary, and the director, Daniel Fury, who's based out of New York, has a very close connection with his family was actually very much affected by the chemical spraying of Agent Orange in Gage Town. So this piece of music is the opening to the documentary.
Okay, well, let's listen to Gage Town now. a very serious topic, you know, that's for that particular film for Gagetown. Very well done, very well done.
Oh,
we
thank
know
you.
That something's coming up that's not too pleasant when you listen to that song. And I'm just noticing that, so Gagetown is a documentary, and do you just love to be involved in work that involves some kind of social awareness or social action or social consciousness? I just wanted to share with the listeners that I shared with you, actually, Zane, that I had some sort of a, I don't know what I call it, a sixth sense about you. After I spoke with you the first time about, you know, having you on the show, I awakened one morning, and I was just feeling very teary-eyed about you, and then it just sort of came to me, this awareness that you're a person who has a very gigantic and gentle and special heart, who really cares about people. And do you remember that conversation? And then you told me that you were working on a project, or had worked on a project and still were working on a project regarding Haiti. And also you were working on a project, I think you're going to Kenya, Africa, very soon. Is that correct?
That is, yeah.
So you tend to love to work on documentaries, or, you know, how did it come about that you're working on documentaries so much?
Well, you know, the thing about it is when I moved to L.A., it was, you know, a while back, I jumped into some of the biggest films that were being made at the time, you know, The Holiday with Jude Law and Cameron Diaz, and, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Simpsons, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the last films I worked on was Dark Knight, you know, which was a huge success at the time. It was the biggest movie, grossing movie ever, I believe. And that might have been topped with Avatar recently. So, you know, I was exposed to that and that world. And although it was an amazing experience, I felt somewhat of an emptiness. Like, there's more I could be doing with my music, and so I didn't know how I was going to make that happen. But it seemed to just happen on its own with these documentaries, and they just happen to be very socially conscious, and they have very deep, profound meanings. But another thing to tie into that is that these films also allow me to travel and record, you know, do field recordings. So, you know, on this Haiti film, I had the opportunity to travel to Haiti in 2006 and work with Haitian musicians throughout the country. That was just an incredible experience, and it was quite addicting. So then, of course, when I found out about this Kenyan documentary in Limu, right outside of Nairobi in Kenya, you know, I instantly thought, well, this is an opportunity to go to Kenya and work with Kenyan musicians. So it kind of works to my advantage as well as helping others.
Okay, that's great. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to one of the songs that you've provided. Just set this up for us a little bit, some of how you got involved in that project. And, you know, I understand that you went around and you recorded musical samples and songs in Haitian churches with Haitian children's choirs, also some indigenous music. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, what that experience was like?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, I was with the filmmakers, and I had the chance to travel really to the full spectrum of Haiti. So, you know, some of the more rural areas, as well as the urban areas, so, you know, some of the established churches, et cetera, where there was actually some sort of city life, nothing like you'd find in the United States, but for Haiti, it was considered a city. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we would trek through the jungle and literally come up to villages where there would be hundreds of kids ready to sing, and I'd, you know, attach my laptop or my recording equipment to a car battery and just start recording, field recording. So I believe you're going to play one of the samples that I recorded. This is in a very rural area, in the middle of one of the jungles in Haiti. Yeah, I recorded this about 30, 35 minutes outside of the city of Port-au-Prince, with this incredible children's choir, and in a church, and again, you know, recording via a laptop and a car battery. So I got the acapella recordings in Haiti. I brought it back to L.A., and then I overdubbed all the instruments. I played them all myself. So all the vocals were done in Haiti. All the instruments were done by me in L.A.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, back in 2006, this is one of the many tracks that I recorded while I was there. Again, all a cappella stuff, you know, tribal rituals to religious choir ceremonies, et cetera. So after the devastating earthquake in January, I decided to put together, to go back to these audio recordings that had never been used and try and put together an album of pop music that's been fused with these Haiti choirs. So something like having, you know, a major celebrity like Justin Timberlake sitting in a room playing the keys and singing, and then this big choir comes in behind him, that sort of thing. So the project is called Spirit of Haiti, and if anyone wants to know more about it, they can always email me at zane@zaneascendi.com, and I can send them more details. But look out for the CD. It should be out in the next couple months. Called Spirit of Haiti.
Great. And would you also just, for the record, let us know what your website address is?
Yeah, it's really easy. It's www.zaneascendi.com. That's spelled ZAINEFFENDI.com. And if you can't understand the spelling, it should be on the Creator's Parrot website as well.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And you can still hang around, of course, as the guest co-host since the interview is over. Thank you so very much, you know, for the interview. And, you know, it's wonderful learning about all the great things that you're doing. And now with Coco. Coco, welcome again. You know, there is no way that I'm not going to have you back on this show because...
it's okay, Val. No worries. No worries.
Oh, that's okay, but it's just there's just so much to talk to you about, and you know, I know us both being so very excited to talk to one another. But why don't you begin by, since we're talking about the Hollywood music and media, one of the things that I want to do is to go ahead and play that song that you submitted, so that people get to hear it. Can you set up this song for us? Tell us the title and a little bit about the background and how it came to be.
Yeah, the secret song is I submitted for the ambient / new age category, and how this song came to be is you know, all of my songs just kind of come as they want to. So, you know, I work a lot on the computer and fool around with loops and things like that, and sometimes loops or tones or something will inspire something. So that's how this song came about. Really, you know, my songs come from some other place, and I believe it's a divine place. So that's how this one came.
Okay, and when we come back, I do want to get in how people can get a free CD, a giveaway from you, in case there are people that are listening and want to get in on that. So let me go ahead and play this song, and then we'll be back.
Okay.
Come on.
song by Coco O'Connor. And Coco, is it true that you're still giving away free CDs of your songs?
Sure. Yeah, I've got my new CD is called Lucere, and it's on Deep Life Records. And I would be more than happy to give some copies of those away. So.
Okay. Well, what I was going to suggest to our viewers is that they do send you go to your Twitter account and send you a message via Twitter. Include their name and their address. And if their name and address is too long to fit into the 140 characters, they probably could put their email address in there. So if you're listening and you'd like one, what is your Twitter account?
It's at COCOOCONNOR, at Coco O'Connor.
Okay, that's your email. What is your Twitter address?
My Twitter is just the www.twitter.com/CocoOConnor.
/CocoOConnor. Okay,
yeah.
So that's twitter.com/CocoOConnor. Okay,
yeah.
Great. And Coco, what do you have a new project going on right now? Are you in the studio? I'm thinking that you are.
You know, actually, what I'm doing is it's really new. I started doing this on part of my last CD where I virtually collaborated with some producers over in the UK. So what I'm doing now is I've got some producers and DJs that are collaborating with me via the internet. So I do have my own studio, so I'm always, it seems like I'm always in the studio, I guess. So I'm working virtually with a lot of people at the moment. So.
And tell us about also, isn't there something special going on your website now? You're keeping some sort of a diary or a journal going on, and I would like to hear a little bit more about that, and any of your fans, I'm sure, would like to know a little bit more about it, too.
Yeah, well, I had a couple of my fans send me some videos of their own personal videos that they had put my music to, so I thought it would be really fun to do a challenge to have a video every week for the next 52 weeks, and at the end of that, they could either send me images via video or just pictures, things like that, and I would put a video together for them using my tunes, or they could do it themselves, and at the end, wherever I got the most videos from, I was going to feature those videos in a live performance. So that's going on. And there also may be another challenge coming up as well with, as I was talking about, the virtual collaboration with some other producers and DJs that I'm working with. So you'll just have to go to CocoOConnor.com and just keep up with it. So.
Great. One of the things I wanted to point out to people about your website is it almost seems as if it's more of a blog sometimes, other than a website, because you know you're sharing so many things about your life. It's all like on a daily basis you're sharing something about your life, you're sharing some words of wisdom, you're giving people hope. Is this something that you've always been doing all of your life, or is this something new? Where I mean, I feel very strongly that you're really a healing artist. You're a very healing person. You're a great person of light. Is this something that is new to you, or something that you've been doing for a long time?
Well, it's actually new to me now. You know, my other website was more, I just started this in the new year. So I think what I decided to do for this new year, my New Year's resolution, if you will, was to be kind of do exactly the opposite of what everybody tells you to do. And like by that I mean as far as an independent artist or music artist. You know, there's a lot of information out there that they say, oh, if you'll just do this, if you'll just do that, you got a tour, you do that, you will find success. And, you know, I felt like that the whole rock star aura, if you will, you know, my other website was kind of more about that. It was a little bit more mysterious, more elusive, and all that. But I just decided that, you know, people my music's very personal, and I want people, I just wanted to have more of a direct communication and more of a lifeline, if you will, to people who enjoy my music, because if they take the time to listen to it, and especially if they take the time to, you know, give me some kind of monetary support for my music, it's extremely important to me, and I'm so very grateful for that, because their time and their energy and, you know, the exchange that we have, whether just via online or Twittering or email or you know, supporting my music, I'm really very grateful, because without that support, I can't continue, you know, you can't continue to be an artist. So I really just wanted to be an open book for people and just to kind of invite them into the world of me, because, you know, I like my world. It's pretty cool. And if people want to experience it, I like that, you know, so I'm hoping they will.
Well, you certainly are accomplishing it, and certainly that aspect of you drew me in. We have about 3 minutes left, and I know that I forgot to ask you what was the first song that you remember hearing, or, you know, what is the first song that had an impact on you to the point where you decided you wanted to go into music, wanted to make music?
Well, this is going to be really funny because of the song that you heard, and that I am an ambient, you know, new age type of, or that's kind of what the category that I was in, so that's interesting. But my first song that I do remember hearing was Applejack, which was by Dolly Parton, and I'm a huge Dolly Parton fan, and I was a member of her fan club here in the, you know, the 70s or the 80s or whatever, and I love her as an all-out, you know, entertainer and her business tips and just everything that she's about. So she's a really big influence, even though my music is not, sounds nothing like that, you know, but I will say that that's really kind of one of my influences that really inspired me to go on this crazy journey. So.
Okay, and the last question, if I can get it in here with 1 minute remaining, is, you know, what is the last song on earth you'd like to hear before you leave this earth? What is the last song? Do you have one in mind?
Well, it's from the same artist, Dolly Parton. It's called the Appalachian Memory, and that song to me, I'm from Alabama, and I come from you know, very down-to-earth people and people of the land and I love that song, what it's about. I relate to it so much, and that's the last one that I definitely would want to hear. So
I'm definitely going to have you back because there's so much more that I want to talk to you about.
Right. Thanks, Val. It was a pleasure. No worries.
Listen, you have a great day. Thank you, everyone, who has called or listened today to Sunday Brunch, the first and last song, and we'll be back in about 2 weeks. So lots of light, love, and music to everyone.
I listen to everything, and not just to the music itself, but to the hearts behind it.